Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tinka, tinka, tinka. Tinka, tinka, tinka. Sound check. Tinka, tinka.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So, okay, the holidays are over, and holiday programming with it. And that means it's time for us to get back to the serious business of hooking you up on your first musical blind date of the new year with a band we think you're gonna love. And a little bit later, we'll take a surprising look at the world of heavy metal fans. But before we get to all that, some unfinished business. Right before Christmas, we did a show on these magical musical moments. You know, you're listening to a song or a symphony or whatever, and all of a sudden you get this strong emotional or even physical reaction to this one little fleeting moment. We spoke with New York Times classical critic Anthony Tomasini about this idea, which he'd been writing about, and the neuroscientist Daniel Levitin tried to explain why this happens. And we asked you for those moments that do it for you, and it seems like classical music was a particularly good source. Derek from Kalamazoo, Michigan, called with this message.
One moment for me that was really touching is in Brahms' Intermezzo in A. There's this moment where it's almost a peaceful... That, to me, is just that when that moment hits the first time after, you know, a little bit of mixture and some speed and rubato, it gets really beautiful right there. Every time I hear it, I get welled up. So that right there is one of those moments.
And Paul in Glen Cove had a different moment to share.
I'd like to reference Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante for violin and viola with orchestra, and the moment at which the solo violin makes its first entrance on a really high note and then descends into a duet. I think that is one of the most thrilling moments in classical music history.
You know, when I heard Paul mention the Sinfonia Concertante by Mozart, I immediately thought, bingo, he's going to go right for that little counter melody in the second movement. But no, he went for this moment from the first movement. So these little magical moments can be very personal. They can also happen with any kind of music. And J. Edward Keyes, the editor-in-chief of eMusic, the online music source, is here to introduce us to three new bands that he thinks may produce some of those thrills and chills for us in the new year. Joe, welcome back and Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you. It's good to be here.
Do you think it will be a particularly happy new year for music fans?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Even just surveying kind of a handful of bands who put out EPs with full lengths promise in the new year, I think we're going to see some exciting things in music in 2013.
So you've come up with eMusic's 13 to Watch in 2013, and the full list is on our website at soundcheck.org. So you're not there's no crystal ball. You actually have some kind of early returns from these bands to base your predictions on.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. You know, it's kind of a combination of gut instinct and then a little bit of science as well. But we always try our best, especially at eMusic, to get behind smaller bands and promote them and give them a leg up early so we can kind of see responses from our members and how they're reacting to them.
All right. Now, from eMusic's list of 13 for 2013, you've picked three for us tonight, beginning with Parquet Courts, Brooklyn band by way of Texas. And in the little blurb that you've written, you say the band is infinitely quotable. What does that mean?
Man, I love this band so much. The analogy I use is, you know, you quote their lyrics the way you would quote The Big Lebowski or some other cult film. The more you listen to them, the wit and the humor in the writing just really kind of sinks into your DNA, and you find yourself quoting them almost accidentally. It just reaps infinite rewards.
Well, let's hear. There's a pretty quotable line, and it kind of stands out in this song called Master of My Craft from Parquet Courts.
I got gold.
The band is called Parquet Courts. Joe Keys, forget about it.
Forget about it. When we first discovered the EP, my friends and I were saying that to each other constantly. Forget about it.
They're from Brooklyn, but this is not the Brooklyn pronunciation, which of course would be forget about it.
Exactly.
The way it's written on the sign as you head out of Brooklyn on the Belt Parkway, it says, leaving Brooklyn, forget about it. So Master of My Craft is from their debut album, Light Up Gold. Is that out yet, or is that imminent?
So it was self-released late last year, but it's going to be coming out in January on the great What's Your Rupture label, so it'll be reissued to a bit wider audience within the first couple weeks of January.
Okay. Then moving on, again, Joe's list of e-music's list of 13 to watch in 2013. The full list is on our website, soundcheck.org. Joe's picked three of them for us tonight. Savages is a band that I was really excited about when they came here for CMJ, the big music festival in October here in New York. Explain who they are and why they're on the list.
Sure. Savages are a band from the UK that I'm particularly excited about because the kind of music that they play is really sort of dark and moody, and I feel like a lot of times when bands attempt that, the result is really slow-moving stuff. But man, their songs are so propulsive and so volatile, and you just really get caught up in kind of the rhythm and the tension. It's like if the Raincoats were a goth band. I was super impressed with what I heard.
And it's, you know... I mean, it seems like everything I've heard from them has been a live recording, so it'll be interesting to see. Have you heard anything done in a studio from them yet?
The only thing I've heard is kind of this initial single called Husbands, which sounds great and seems to really capture a lot of the energy that their live set has become known for.
Mm-hmm. There is a live version of this song out there on the web, but let's hear this single from the London post-punk band Savages.
The face of a god. He had no
from London, that is the band called Savages, and their single called Husbands, and according to Joe Keys of E! Music, that is a band that is probably going to light it up in 2013, part of E! Music's 13 to watch in 2013. Check out our website for the full list. Joe's picked three of them for us on Soundcheck tonight. So we've heard from Brooklyn, we've heard from London, obviously two kind of regular sources of great new bands. Where do we go for our third pick?
These guys are based in Portland, Oregon, and it's a band called Pure Bathing Culture. And I first heard of them because this EP came out on a label called Father Daughter that I kind of keep my eye on because they seem to be pretty savvy in picking bands. And they just caught my attention the instant I heard the first song on the EP.
So is that kind of generally how it works these days, that you begin to kind of follow small labels because they have a kind of curatorial thing that appeals to you?
That's the way it works for me, for sure. I have a small kind of stable of record labels. Hozak in Chicago is another one that I'm always keeping an eye on because it seems like they're either putting out 7-inches or records by bands who then 6 or 8 months later will go on to be quite successful and really well-known. And it's a great credit to labels like them, labels like Sacred Bones, for really getting it on the ground floor and getting to it before everyone else.
Right. Now, but when those bands do blow up and become, you know, kind of buzzy bands, do they stay with those smaller labels, or are these generally kind of launching pads and not the places where bands stay?
Most of the time they do end up being launching pads, although credit to Zola Jesus, who stuck with Sacred Bones and put out her most recent record, which is fantastic, through their label as well. And you know, remains to be seen, kind of hopefully she'll continue to do so in the future.
All right, so Pure Bathing Culture out of Portland, Oregon, from this father-daughter label. The members of the band are also in the group Vetiver, who've been here in our soundcheck studio. Is there a full length on the horizon from this group?
Not that I've heard of. This EP just came out just a few months ago, but the 4 songs here are so pretty and so engaging that I really hope they'll put out something longer soon.
All right, we'll hear a song called Lucky One from this band, Pure Bathing Culture. And actually, after the break, we'll hear from another band that's on eMusic's 13 to Watch in 2013. That's coming up. We'll get to the group called Nightbeds. Joe, you're a fan of them as well, right?
I sure am, yeah.
All right, J. Edward Keyes is editor-in-chief at eMusic. Joe, thanks very much for getting our new year off to such a good start.
Thanks again for having me.
Band is called Pure Bathing Culture. The song is Lucky One. We'll look to hear more from them in 2013. Up next, another band to watch out for this year. Nashville-based. They're called Nightbeds. They won't release their debut album till February, but we'll introduce them to you tonight on one of our Soundcheck blind dates. And handwriting analysts out there, take a peek at their blind date questionnaire, filled out entirely by hand. It's up right now on soundcheck.org. There are words, of course, but symbols and scribbles, and that's all I can say about it. Stay with us to hear the band play live next on Soundcheck.
It's Soundcheck's Blind Date. It's a blind date between you, the listener, and an artist you've probably never met. It's possible you could find true love. And now, back to our host, John Schaefer.
Well, on today's blind date, we're setting you up with the band Nightbeds. The group is led by Winston Yellen, a songwriter who hails from Colorado Springs but has found a home in Nashville. The band's debut full-length is called Country Sleep. It's not out until February, but they're giving us an early chance to fall in love with it here today. Winston, to you and the rest of the band, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So you filled out our Soundcheck blind date questionnaire, which listeners will be able to see on the website. Before you do your first song, let me ask you about your first answer. We said, describe your music in 3 words or less, and you wrote, khaki dad jams.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Do you have an explanation for that?
I just feel like, you know, like it's music for dads to kind of groove out to and kind of shake it a little bit, if, you know, get that angst out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really into dad culture.
Dad culture. A lot of dad culture.
You could have just said no.
Yeah, that'd probably been a better route. We'll edit that out later.
You want to start us off with the song Ramona?
Sure thing.
The band is called Nightbeds, and here they are on Soundcheck. Due to rights issues, we're unable to podcast today's in-studio session.
Boo!
But you can stream the performance and interview on our website, soundcheck.org.
Yay!
Find lots more yay at soundcheck.org. So these blind dates are not the only way that we preview upcoming music on Soundcheck. Each week on our website, soundcheck.org, we present Check Ahead, a preview of an entire new album. This week we're streaming the forthcoming release from tenor sax player Joe Lovano and his quintet, Us Five. The album's called Cross Culture. It features regular group members like Grammy-winning bassist Esperanza Spalding and special guest guitarist Lionel Lueke. Here's a little bit from the lead-off track called Blessings in May. To listen to the whole upcoming album from Joe Lovano's Us Five, visit soundcheck.org and check ahead. Coming up, a conversation with music journalist and photographer Lena Dawes about her new book called What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. That's next on Soundcheck. Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. Music journalist Lena Dawes has been a fan of heavy metal since she first started listening to bands like Black Sabbath and Deep Purple as a kid in rural Ontario, Canada. But being part of the metal scene hasn't always been easy, as she chronicles in her new book, What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. She joins me here in the studio. Lena, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So was this a memoir? Did it start as a memoir? Did it turn into a memoir?
It turned into a memoir. I really did not want it to be a memoir. And now that I'm getting a bit of, you know, the reviews coming in, I'm a little bit embarrassed. But basically, I thought it was important to kind of set the story as to my journey into heavy metal and my work as a journalist and also my background to kind of tell people why this book is laid out the way it is, mm-hmm. and which is a lot from my personal experiences in the scene.
So what was the original intent then when you set out on this path?
The main intent was to show how heavy metal music can be used as a form of liberation and kind of self-expression for Black women. I really was interested in finding Black women fans and musicians, giving them kind of a platform for them to talk about their stories, mm-hmm. because in a lot of mainstream media outlets, usually we're not allowed, or our stories are not really wanted or just generally ignored in terms of Black women's, you know, expression and self-expression, especially in extreme music.
So that's a pretty niche market that you were looking for, you know, Black women who are fans of metal. What was your experience? What's the trajectory of your love of this music?
I'm really into heavy metal. And I guess my journey was, I was always wondering why I was the only Black person at a show. Mm. And also feeling kind of ostracized and insecure, because I thought, you know, when I was much younger, I thought, is there something wrong with me? Because I love going to shows. I love extreme music. And I'm also very into kind of cultural and critical race theory. Mm-hmm. And that's my background. So I wanted to kind of look at the two areas. And I believe they meld together. I wanted to kind of see if other people felt that they did too.
Well, now this, as you say, longstanding interest in like cultural race theory, would this have come from your experience as a young Black kid growing up in a white neighborhood with white adoptive parents and kids next door listening to, you know, Judas Priest and Black Sabbath or whatever?
Yeah, definitely. Because of my background, like, interestingly enough, I was always very proud to be Black, mm-hmm. and I was always very proud to, I wanted to know more, especially because I was adopted, and I wanted to know more about kind of my people and the history of my people. And, you know, and also kind of having this love affair with the music, you know, especially like Black Sabbath and Deep Purple, and also the blues that was in that music, and being very confused how the same people who were listening to Black Sabbath, who were calling me, you know, racial epithets, were actually listening to music that really had this heavy influence in blues. And it seemed very hypocritical.
Yeah.
But it was just something that I was always really interested in exploring.
Maybe not hypocritical as much as ignorant.
Well, yeah, I was trying to be nice.
You have to be nice here. That's not what we're about on Soundcheck. Lena Dawes is with us. The Canadian music journalist is author of the new book, What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. I am saying that title right.
Right.
Correct?
It's right.
What Are You Doing
exactly,
Here?
Exactly.
Not
yeah.
like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Which would be a much different question. How often have you gotten that question, either explicitly or sort of implied?
Almost every time I've gone to like a venue to see a show. And sure, not a lot of people are going up to you and saying, what are you doing here? But I you get the dirty looks. You get the looks of surprise and shock. You know, even as I'm also a concert photographer, so if I'm in the photo pit with my camera, people are just like stunned as to, you know, why is this middle-aged woman doing here? You know, so, I mean, all the time, you know, it runs from being just passive and surprised looks to being, you know, quite hostile
right.
at times.
Let me cycle back before we get too far from the blues roots, the African-American roots of heavy metal. I mean, as you look back maybe to between your two gateway bands, Deep Purple and Black Sabbath, I guess maybe you could hear more of it in Black Sabbath, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
What would be a good example of a Black Sabbath song where you can maybe hear the echo of those old blues roots?
I can give you one that I've just found recently, which is from Deep Purple. It's called a song called Mistreated.
Mm-hmm.
It was out in 1974. David Cloverdale was the vocalist. I happened to find it on YouTube this summer, and it is the best representation in terms of blues music. And they actually introduced, when Deep Purple played it live in California back in the 70s, at these huge three-day metal hard rock festivals, and he actually said, this is a blues song.
I've been mistreated. We'll be right back.
Treated is the name of that old song from Deep Purple. Lena Dawes with me on soundcheck, and that sort of showing the African-American roots of what Lena has become, not just a bastion of dudes, you know, the heavy metal world, but of white men. Even white women's experience in the metal world is somewhat unusual.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for white women, I mean, there's usually the archetype of the miserable girlfriend who is forced to go to the metal show with her boyfriend slash husband, and she stands there and she's bored and she's rolling her eyes and tugging at her boyfriend's sleeve. That's kind of the stereotype that's out there. But there actually is a lot of women, especially working behind the scenes as journalists, photographers, PR people. It's been fascinating in the last decade for me to meet so many women who are, you know, so serious, if not more, than their male counterparts.
And what has their experience been? Does it sort of echo yours?
To a point, it does, in terms of the blatant sexism, and also in terms of, you know, I guess the propensity for sexual assault, the inappropriate touching or groping or people making, you know, highly sexualized comments towards them. But one thing I wanted to do with this book is really separate the fact that there is a huge difference between the experience of the black woman's experience and women of color based on racialized sexual stereotypes that exist versus the sexual stereotypes that any woman can face in that scene.
Well, now, and here we come to one of the kind of big surprises in your book, which is that a lot of the kind of pushback that you have gotten as a black woman in the heavy metal scene has come from other people in the black community.
Definitely, definitely.
What's at play? I mean, are these people also ignorant of the African-American roots of this music?
In some ways, I think that they are. I mean, one of my interviewees had said to me early on that, you know, during the kind of the post-civil rights era, that you know, Little Richard was doing very well as kind of a rock and roll musician, and Chuck Berry, and you know, and then a little later, Jimi Hendrix, and that there was such a impetus for Northern African Americans to say, okay, this is post-civil rights. We want to be perceived this way. We want to be perceived as regular folk and move, integrate into neighborhoods. Anything that might shed a negative light on their community was to be shunned. So in that case, my interviewee was saying that black people didn't want rock and roll albums in the home. They didn't like Little Richard. They didn't like what he presented. Chaka Khan was another really good example where, you know, she was being a young woman at her age, dressed, beautiful woman, dressed provocatively as a singer, and a lot of people were very embarrassed by how she looked. So I think that since then, and also that we racialize music so much, white people listen to rock and roll and country, black people listen to hip-hop. There's resentment against the popularity of hip-hop. I mean, one of the things that people have said to me in the show, when I go to a show, is, don't you people have your own music? So there is a resentment there in terms of you should be listening to this.
The Lena Dawes' book is called What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. And you said at the beginning it wasn't meant to be a memoir. You wanted to, like, reach out to other fans who were black women in the metal community. And there are, in fact, some bands that, you know, when you look in the mirror, you see a reflection of, you know, someone that you've recently seen on stage, and you interview some of these women as well. What are their experiences like, and what do they do for you and for other black women in the community?
It's amazing how much an image means to people, how it kind of translates into some level of acceptability. I think that the women I spoke to, like Skin from Skunk and Anansu, who did the foreword.
This is a British metal band.
Yeah. And, you know, she talks about how their main issue was marketing. One of the things that they had a problem with as a band, because it is kind of it's a mishmash of different aggressive genres. But because she was a black woman on the cover of a record album, it would go into hip-hop or R&B, and nobody was able to find their album. She found it very hard coming to Canada, the States and Canada, in terms of there was more resistance to a black woman doing rock in North America than there was in England. And so that was some of, you know, their issues as a band and her being the front woman. They're selling Jesus again. They're selling Jesus again. They want your soul and your money. Keep lying and your bones. They're selling Jesus again. Selling love to you. Selling love. You're buying this, you're buying that now. You're wishing all the money. Well, belong to you. You're crucified upon your own cross now. You're giving money to the white man in the white limo. The kind of God is always man-made. They made him up, they wrote a book to keep you on your knees. They get the theories from the same place. I build a church to get some money now. On the other hand, you know, all the women I spoke to, like Militia from Judas Priestess, who's from Brooklyn, Alexis Brown from Tetrarch, who's from Tennessee, and Diamond Rowe, who's a lead guitarist of a metal band from Atlanta, they always have people, women, coming up to them after shows and like, thank God you're here. You make it okay for me to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing them on stage makes it somehow okay for them to love the music they love.
There are many species of heavy metal nowadays, Lena.
Right.
Some of them pretty extreme. And you sort of, you know, you describe yourself as someone drawn towards ever more extreme forms of music. At some point, though, you reach, you know, bands like Borzum, you know, from Norway.
Yeah.
Where the message, the people behind the message is... You know, it's not just like, well, it's a song about aggression. No, these are aggressive people who did aggressive things and are now in prison because of it. How far are you willing to go? Is there a line you will not cross as a listener and fan?
Definitely. And not, and, you know, I've had this conversation with a number of people. And for me, I can only say is if I know that the musician has made disparaging remarks, homophobic, anti-Semitic, racist remarks, whether within the music, the lyricism of the song, or in the media, in the public sphere, I will not purchase their music. I would not listen to their music. Obviously, I feel very strong about that. However, this is one of the issues with this book that was so interesting, was that I spoke to Black women fans who were like, well, you know, it's just music. You know, I don't know the person, and they have the right to think what they want. And I'm thinking, well, as a consumer, like, why would you purchase music by somebody who's disrespected you or disrespected people that you know? So it's really a subjective, it is a subjective thing for a lot of people. To me, it shouldn't be. But I know that one of the instances I write about in my book, which is Phil Aslemo, I hope I pronounced that right, from when he was in Pantera, he made some pretty highly racialized remarks, which caused a lot of people to really reconsider their love for that band. And since that time, he has somewhat made amends. But it was, for me, as a huge Pantera fan back in the 90s, I really had to question my loyalty to that band because of what he said.
Well, and you mentioned in passing in the book, you know, the ban on Wagner in Israel. You know, it's like, at what point do you separate the man, and it is men in both of these cases, from the music?
Right.
And that's a very tricky, and you're a journalist too, so there's also the question of objectivity that you need to maintain.
Yeah, and I can be, because I do a lot of album reviews, you know, I can be objective because it's not about me. It's about providing information on an album to other people. However, depending on who I'm writing for, I would say I wouldn't say by the way, but I would mention it. Some if there's controversy surrounding this, because that is important for people to know if they're going to purchase the music or not.
Now, the book again is called "What Are You Doing Here: A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal." Do you still feel all these years later liberated by this music with
definitely.
All the problems that you detail in the book?
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's not, people don't like when you talk about race and racism. or sexism. And it's easy to just discount people's experiences as that they're whining. The purpose for this book was really to say, I'm angry about this. This should not be happening. This shouldn't be happening to some of the wonderful women I met. We're angry about this. We want change, but we also want the right to be able to tell our stories and our narratives, the good and the bad, in a forum where we are not going to be judged. Mm-hmm. You have to listen to us. And that was, you know, to me was very important to get across in this book.
And then you still want to be able to go out at night and bang your head.
Exactly. And you just, you know, you do. It's important.
Lena Dawes has been with us on Soundcheck, the Canadian music journalist, author of the book, What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. It's a great story. Lena, thanks for sharing it with us.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
This is Soundcheck. That's all we have time for today. Join us at soundcheck.org tomorrow at 2 p.m. to listen to our live web stream with the band The Lone Bellow. The Brooklyn group is another of those bands to watch out for this year, and they'll play live in our studio. Go to soundcheck.org at 2 p.m. tomorrow and click on the live stream link at the top of the page. Join us tomorrow night at 9 as we get a preview of some new music coming our way early this year. And we'll introduce the California band Milo Green to someone they weren't exactly expecting to meet. See you back here tomorrow night. Until then, you can find interviews, videos, and exclusive new music on soundcheck.org, including this brand new track from the Philadelphia rock band Free Energy. It's called Girls Want Rock, and you can hear it exclusively on soundcheck.org right now. Be with us again tomorrow. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.